This episode of Film Sack is brought to you by Audible.com. Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack and get your free audiobook now. Additional support comes from Michael Brannan for his lovely wife, Arena, and Roy Robinson. This episode is for you.
You know, my dad says you guys are full of crap.
Jason,
well, some people have trouble believing in the paranormal.
No, he just says you guys are full of crap and that's why you went out of business.
Death is but a doorway. Time is but a window. This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. And we're so thrilled to be back. I'm Scott Johnson. Great show ahead of us. Before I get to that, let's get to this. Join me now in welcoming Mr. Brian Ray Dunaway.
On a mountain of skulls in the castle of pain, I sit on a throne of blood. What was, will be. What is will be no more. Now is the season of evil.
Wow.
All right, that's just a quote from the movie. I'm putting as much effort into this intro as they put into this whole sequel of busting apparitions. Also, my dad says you are full of crap.
All right. I like that. You know what? You did. You almost did a good Max von Sydow voice. So good job on that. Also with us, Mr. Randy Vigo Jordan.
Aloha, Scott, Brian, and Brian. Yeah, I'm totally cool with you having to open the window in the baby's room if you don't have AC. But seriously, if the baby's window doesn't have a screen on it, you should go to jail.
Oh, that's the truth.
You're in a building that high.
Yeah. Dang it, you're making me laugh, and I still have the stupid cough. Also, following the end of this thing, we have Mr. Brian Pointless Sequel Ibbit.
Is Dunaway the pointless sequel to Ibbit? I'm not sure.
Any
comedy that starts with the near death of a baby on a New York street really sets the stage for the hilarity that comes to follow.
I will argue with you as to whether anything was ever hilarious in this film.
Oh, I will too, because I will argue with you then.
I
laughed my ass off.
I don't think there'll be any arguments.
We'll get to that, because I don't know so much. But a quick announcement before we get to what Ghostbusters 2 is really about, the core of the apple, as it were. At the end of the show today, stay tuned, because at the end of the show, we announce the winning film for the live Film Sack at Nerdtacular 2011 happening on June 17th in less than 16 days. We have chosen the film, and we chose it based on your votes, and one of those voters was randomly picked from the winning vote to get a full swag bag from the event. Now, all of you else of you who voted and paid your $10, not only
I'm going to make this sentence work no matter what.
You're trying to talk like that guy, Peter McNichol from the movie, aren't you?
Exactly. He was my favorite thing. But anyway, you guys all got, for your $10, you not only helped support the event and get to vote the way you did, and many of you voted for the same one as well, but you guys are all getting a swag pack as well. That's all coming in the mail, so we'll give you details at the end. Yeah, they're all, you get a thing, and you get a thing.
You get a thing?
And you get a thing. And then we all hope.
Just look under your seats right now.
Indeed. So we're talking about Ghostbusters 2, and as usual, Scott Fletcher says it better than we do, so we are going to allow him to do that. Scott Fletcher, take it away.
Ghostbusters 2. In director Ivan Reitman's commercially successful sequel, The Fearless Ghostbusters, Venkman, played by Bill Murray, Ray, played by Dan Aykroyd, Egon, played by Harold Ramis, and Winston, played by Ernie Hudson, find themselves out of business after waging a war on slime that cost New York City millions. The guys are forced to find new careers, but ultimately reunite when an ancient tyrant targets Venkman's ex-girlfriend, played by Sigourney Weaver, and her infant son,
played by a pair of twins. All right, so it's Ghostbusters 2, and I haven't seen it since 1989, and I thought it was better than this.
Oh, you did?
I don't like it. I think it's a bad sequel. I want to get it out front and center here. Now, yeah. I'm anxious to find out what Randy was laughing at so hard, because I was really disappointed in the jokes and the stuff. And you got to understand, I am a dyed-in-the-wool Dan Aykroyd supporter till death. I think he is awesome. He makes me laugh. All I have to do is close my eyes, and Grocer the Hitman is trying to shoot me with two guns. He is amazing. I love this man. All right? That's the best thing he ever did, by the way.
And you love him. He's amazing, and he's not really counted on to do anything in this movie.
No. Who is in the movie? Nobody.
I think it seems like Bill Murray is the only person that Harold Ramis kind of let go.
Just go ahead
and do whatever you want in this scene. And he does his typical Bill Murray thing, which is awesome, but it's not enough to make up for the rest of the heartbreak.
the hour and 40 minutes of heartbreak. But Dunaway, you were saying something.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say this movie failed so miserably as a sequel in our minds that it totally stopped part three from ever being made. Even though this movie was successful financially. Yeah.
Well, of course it was. Just like the Matrix sequels were successful financially.
But it was so bad that it destroyed any chance of a third part.
Yeah. And Bill Murray thinks he has the reason. In some of the trivia I found, he says that he was very disappointed in the end result of the film.
Yeah.
Because he felt like the slime had more screen time than the actors did. And it's true. They really didn't get to do the things they were supposed to do. So Dan Aykroyd and Egon, Harold Ramis, are supposed to be kind of the little tinker nerds that make big stuff happen. They weren't really allowed to do anything. Well, Randy, you just said it. Ray doesn't get to do anything significant in the film that he wrote, for heaven's sakes.
Mm-hmm. How many times he fired up the protons?
Oh, they only called them protons for the first time in that last scene, though, that or the scene with the fake train, ghost train. I didn't know that. So let me read that to you real quick. It says, let's see. The term proton pack was never officially used on screen ever in any of the Ghostbusters lore until the Ghostbusters are in the subway tunnel. And Egon says, before we go any further, I think we should get our proton packs. Mm-hmm. I love stuff like that, where we just think proton packs is common terminology. Well,
because we watched the real Ghostbusters every Saturday morning, where that term was used constantly.
Yeah, that's true. It was used on. And did you notice the big rubber ghost was the Ghostbusters or the cartoon guy?
Mm-hmm.
Not like the one from the first one, but like the actual cartoon looking
the Slimer. Right,
Slimer?
Yeah, Slimer. That is, he has a name.
Yeah.
But in the cartoon, didn't he live there in the station and hang out?
He did. Mm-hmm. He did indeed. And I would have preferred watching the cartoon over this.
No, wait. There's the real Ghostbusters, and then there's some other cartoon.
Well, the real Ghostbusters wasn't these guys. It was was based on something else, right? Ghostbusters, the cartoon, was based on the one back during the 70s.
Yeah.
Oh, there was one in the 70s? What?
Yeah, the TV series that was later on spawned a...
There was a TV series based on this?
Yeah, well,
not based on this. Okay. No. There were two separate franchises. There was the Ghostbusters that came out in the 70s and then the Ghostbusters that started in the 80s with Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd.
There was a 70s show called The Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
It was kind of a Scooby-Doo kind of thing.
Oh, all right. Mm-hmm. And that's why, is that what the real Ghostbusters are
based on? That's why they have the term real Ghostbusters.
Clear it up for us, Uncle Randy.
Man. Give us the scoop.
Okay, so... You understand that there was a 70s live-action TV show called Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
All right.
This was later on a cartoon.
Yeah.
This was completely unrelated to what we just watched, right?
Right, of course.
In the 80s, there were two cartoons. There was one by Filmation, and there was one by Columbia.
All right.
Yes.
All right?
Filmation He-Man.
Filmation was called The Ghostbusters, and Columbia's was called The Real Ghostbusters.
Okay.
And that's the only explanation needed for the difference between the two.
The real Ghostbusters is the one that you're used to.
Right.
Everyone's used to. Right. There were seven seasons of The Real Ghostbusters.
that's the one based on the cast that we're talking about now.
Right. with the same characters and everything. Yes. Sorry.
Thank you for
with
the
that,
filmation.
With that music right there.
He-Man. Right. So I don't know. Okay, fine.
Oh, the Ghostbusters. I was expecting He-Man.
So that's all fine. Although He-Man, dude, we got to do that soon. Anyway, that's all fine. Everything you said is fine. Whatever. They're based on whatever. The real love I have for Ghostbusters resides in the first film, and the first film is good because not because it's about special effects that were relatively cutting edge at the time, and not about the paranormal or even the parody of the paranormal. It was because Venkman, Egon, Ray, and all these characters, I keep leaving Ernie Hudson out, but all these characters
as they did too.
By the way, he's really good on Oz. Holy crap.
Like really? Harold Ramis?
No, Ernie Hudson.
Ernie Hudson.
Ernie Hudson.
Yeah, he plays the prison warden on Oz. And he's really good. Like, he's really gritty and good. And I kind of have new respect for the guy. And even more anger over the fact that he gets so sidelined in these Ghostbusters movies. But anyway, my point is this. Those characters are what matters.
Right.
And how they interact mm-hmm. and what they do and their eccentricities and that Peter's kind of a douche and that... You know, but he's also kind of charming in the end and kind of does the right thing. And Ray is super brilliant, but really obnoxiously sort of Asperger-y and all that. And they don't play to any of that in this movie at all. So, Randy, what were you laughing at during the film?
No, they play some to it. Harold Ramis's Egon Spengler is pretty much as Egon as he can be. I mean, when he's first seen on screen, he's running some tests. He's running some experiment on emotions having an impact on environment, mm-hmm. and he's running two concurrent tests at the same right across the room from him, and it's just like it's like the nerdiest thing you'll ever see. You know, his hair is nerdy. Everything about him is nerdy.
I also like when he scanned Sigourney Weaver when she came in.
Right. Yeah, he's scanned. Like it's hysterical. There were a lot of things like that in this movie for me. There were a lot of these large gags. Mm. And if you just come down to, can Rick Moranis communicate a joke after, you know, whatever this is, 22 years on, the answer is no. Mm. That's why you haven't heard of Rick Moranis in 15 years. And
I think that's a travesty.
Hey, yeah. That's not very nice.
It's also, well, it's also not exactly true. He did some voice work and some stuff, but right. mostly you're right. As but, an actor, he retired right. in 97 I mean, and said, I'm done.
He did a couple of movies. Right. He did, you might have heard, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's his last. Before. Yeah, that was his last real big thing. What's he done since?
Nothing.
But what else does he need to do?
No, there's a whole schmear. Like there's a whole schmear about this. His wife, about 3 years after this, died of I want to say liver cancer. Kind of sudden-like and all this, and he decided, I'm going to take a bit of a sabbatical, like a two-year thing, just to get away from the pressure of this Hollywood machine. And then he decided at the end of that 2 years that, you know what, this is kind of nice, and I don't really miss that world, and I got plenty of money, so I'm done. So he is effectively retired. Now, he came back for his brother Bear voiceover, and also to do the voice of Doug McKenzie in the cartoon, the short-run cartoon that was on for a while of Bob and Doug. And nothing else, really. I mean, a couple little things here and there, but nothing live action or whatever. This movie made me the whole time wish Rick Moranis was still working. And you're probably right, Randy. It couldn't work the same, or it may not be this. I don't know. May not work anymore, just like Doug does, or the other one. Yeah, Doug Bob. McKenzie. What's his name?
Bob.
No, he's got the same name as the guy that ran Wendy's Hamburgers before he died.
Yes.
Dave Thomas.
Dave Thomas is kind of... blah now, right?
Like right. So, but I mean, coming back around to my whole point, I haven't seen either or the first or second of these movies in a very long time. I was watching this very fresh, and I was really enjoying all the gags. Like, I remember seeing it. I remembered the whole setup and Peter McNichol and his very odd, muddled, generic European accent.
I liked him.
But yeah, he was good.
He was the best. Everything you're doing is bad.
Yeah.
Please stop. The hilarity is over. Please go.
Yeah, he was good. He was good.
But, you know, like it was the big gags for me, and they got me. They got me all nice and fresh, and there were bunches of them. You know, practically every scene was like the scene was designed to be a gag a lot more than Bill Murray's, you know, jokes that he's constantly making.
I think I was in the wrong mood then because I don't know. It just felt, a lot of this fell flat. I kind of had a lot of these, that's supposed to be funny, but it's not really funny here. Or this is way drawn out. Like the first part of this movie, way too drawn out and slow. Like they just do not get to the action or the fun for.
Oh, dude! Didn't you love how it started with that awesome effect of slime coming up through the concrete?
Yeah, but then okay, no. The very first scene, slime comes up through the concrete, gets awesome. On the wheels. The thing suddenly gets a mind of its own, starts taking off. She has to chase after it.
That's a really great effect, by the way. I'd like you to tell me how you would shoot that effect. That's
I would have some sort of fake sidewalk and then squirt stuff up through it.
Yeah, first I wouldn't do slime. I would go, you know what? We already did slime in the first one. Let's figure out something else. Because you know where this is going? This is going to us freaking spraying the Statue of Liberty down with slime, and it's not going to be good.
That's not going to end well for anybody. That was so stupid. Okay, okay. So, Brian, you bring up a good point, and I want to make this very clear. This is my opinion of the film. This is a blueprint from the first movie. It really is a blueprint. Movie. It's like, right. Here's the lead up. Here are the conventions. Here are the tropes. Here are the things we're going to do all over again. It's going to look slightly different, but it's basically going to be the same. And at the end, we need something that's equivalent to the giant Pillsbury Doughboy or whatever the hell it was, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. It needs to be kind of like that, but even bigger. Well, let's get the Statue of Liberty to tromp around and smash stuff.
You're right on the money, because even to the point where they kind of have to have the Ghostbusters start at ground zero. So they come up with this thing that apparently even after they saved the city and did all this stuff, they kind of lost favor with the citizens of New York and the mayor. And they kind of had to start, okay, we have to start over from scratch, kind of rebuilding that trust and rebuilding our reputation. And then they go into the reputation and, we have the montage of them doing all the ghost busting that they did. And again, right from the first, a template right from the first movie. But when you think about even that lead-in, that original lead-in from the first movie that takes place in the library, how much more fun just on the whole that was compared to the opening of this movie. You know, it's Dana's kid, Oscar, careening down the street, down New York, a busy New York street. It just wasn't fun. It was like slapsticky mayhem kind of stuff. Whereas
it's a fine line, isn't it, though? Like, it's just a tone. Yeah. It's a tone.
It really
thing.
Is. It's really timing to me in comedy. And every scene felt a little rushed. They didn't give the scene time to develop. It's like, and that's what I was thinking with the blueprint. I mean, it's just, okay, we got to do this scene and we got to do it like this. And it just felt, if it could have just been just a little bit longer, I think they could have made the time right.
It was a little safe. It was a little safe.
It was real safe.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I want to like it more. I want to laugh at it more. I really did. I sat there going, okay, let this please be great. Because I love the first movie to a fault.
I'm going to agree
in love with that film.
I'm going to agree with Bill Murray and say that, yeah, this movie starred the slime too much. I can think of many scenes where there's like a scene where they got outside the museum and you're looking at the museum and it's just like a long scene of people running around outside the museum. And I'm like, well, that was kind of useless. I mean, and it looks really bad too, because the effect they were using for that slime, with it being pink, neon pink, just failed.
Mm. Felt bad. Not a fan, huh? Of that.
No, it felt bad.
And then and the whole emotional state of slime is a weird direction to take it.
I actually liked the effect it had on humans. I did not like the fact that it animated things. That fell flat for me. But
and the fact that the slime was caused by the
hate.
The hatred for exactly the hatred for New York.
Let's get to the bottom line. I'm going with Scott here. When the solution to all your problems is bring everybody together and sing, you haven't figured out a solution.
Yes.
When you are basically in your sci-fi comedy film invoking the Care Bears, you've screwed up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how I see it. I don't know. I just feel like there could have been so much more here. I mean, Dan Aykroyd, a very smart, great writer. He wrote the first one. He co-wrote it.
Yeah.
And he's got all kinds of cool stuff. But back in 89, he was starting to, you know, feel his oats with like Driving Miss Daisy, and he was getting acting cred. And don't forget, right after this, Nothing But Trouble happened.
Oh, really? Trouble was after Ghostbusters 2?
The next year. So, he was probably in the middle of doing it. But Nothing But Trouble, which is the worst. I've said this before, and I'll say it again. The worst movie I've ever seen in my life. I hated it.
Let's
talk
Moore.
About it again on
FilmSack. No. If we ever watch it, that'll be a day in hell that I will not look forward to.
Come on, you made me watch Johnny Mnemonic.
That's true, we did.
And I walked out of that one.
I'll take one for the team. I'll take one for the team.
Do you know what scene worked in this movie? Is when Egon was out on the street and Bill Murray had to come and talk to the cops. I mean,
I love that gag.
Yeah, where they had to explain what they were doing, and
that was what was working. That was what was working. I mean, that whole interaction and trying to see, Vinkman pull
the movie. The movie has about half a dozen such gags. Yeah, you know, like the whole thing where Rick Moranis's character is pressed into service as a trial lawyer.
That was great. That made me laugh. I was laughing my head off at that.
Yeah. There's several scenes like that in the film.
I have captured one that is maybe my favorite moment in the film. So there were moments. There's no question about it. There were definitely moments, but there were moments in the Matrix sequels. There were moments in Crystal Skull that you could kind of look at and go, okay, well, that'd be all right by itself. Very few, mind you. For me,
those moments were because the actors themselves are so funny. Dan Aykroyd is funny. Bill Murray is funny. Mm-hmm. Harold Ramis is funny. It had nothing to do with whether the plot, what was going on as far as moving the plot forward was funny. It was, all right, these actors know how to deliver a line, and anybody else would be syncing with the rest of it.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm interested to see if anyone has not seen the original Ghostbusters and would just watch this one, because it can stand alone by its own. Mm. And I'd be curious to see what they would think of it as compared.
By the way, after Nothing But Trouble, his next film that he wrote was Coneheads in 93. And I've said on the show before, my favorite SNL skit.
I've got to go back and watch that because I just can't.
I had a great time with it. Chris Farley was great. It was great. Yeah. I really like it.
I have to watch that again. Yeah.
It seems like it should be ultra dumb.
Yeah.
And it is conceptually, but it's pulled off. Like, they nail it. It's great. You guys should see it if you haven't seen it. Coneheads, 1993, in stores.
Coneheads, if you haven't heard it.
Which reminds me, someone got the impression from me, I forget who, someone on our blog or something got the impression from me that I was endorsing MacGruber a few episodes ago.
Oh.
Not endorsing MacGruber.
I think you were the one not endorsing MacGruber.
No, I think I said it wasn't as bad as you were told, which is, I mean, that's every year on Memorial Day, by the way, every year there's a film that the critics just pan unnecessarily, it's mediocre and everybody calls it bad.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's the Last Action Hero effect. Mm. And it's always on Memorial Day.
Is that Hangover 2 for you this year?
Yeah. Yeah. We went and saw that, Saturday, and it wasn't as bad as the ratings.
Is the sequel?
It was, it was mediocre.
I might have actually been the one defending MacGruber.
You might have been. You liked it.
That sounds right.
Yeah, I chuckled at it. I thought there were, again, kind of thought there were bits and pieces that were funny and
well, this is one. This is an aspect of Trolls we need to remind ourselves that exists. They have a hard time distinguishing between people when they're facts. they don't know who's saying what. So there's that.
Right. Right.
All right. So, wait,
who watched this movie with their spouses?
I did. I watched part of it with Kim, and she got bored.
No, Randy.
Yeah, not me.
Right.
First movie she loved.
Yeah,
I watched the movie at work, so that was actually kind of weird.
Okay, my wife's a little bit younger than me, and she didn't know that it was Bobby Brown as the doorman.
Oh yeah, yeah. I recognized that the instant I heard his voice.
Well,
I
also that terrible theme song that.
I guess they're going to have to take control. Yeah,
I hate that stuff. Hate it.
Lots of good cameos though on this.
Yeah,
Cheech Marin and Ben Stein.
it was a regular Muppet movie. At this
Cheech Marin.
It was
Cheech Marin.
Cheech Marin.
Yeah. Marin.
Henry.
His whole thing was like sitting behind a window of glass and making faces when stuff
like
were coming
in. Two lines, right?
Yeah.
it was kind of a weird thing to put him in, but I'll take a little Cheech with my whatever movie you're serving up. Ivan Reitman, of course, directing. We talked about who's in it. Most of the cast returns. I think everybody pretty much except the guy that Peter Venkman says has no dick in the first movie.
Yeah.
So and also
with
the new
Frick.
Replaced with the new dickless guy.
Yeah, we have Kurt Fuller instead, who's in lots of things, and I always like to see him do stuff. So he's also
Ernie Hudson didn't return for this one.
No. Walked in. He had the fake train go over him, but that was it.
Oh, was y'all a little bit offended? That was so white faced.
Kind of was.
Black guy, humor,
thing.
You know what I'm talking about?
Buckwheat.
Come on.
A little bit, yeah.
I was a little bit offended. I was like, what year was this again? I was thinking, wow, really?
Well, these guys you're supposed to believe that the Ghostbusters have been doing their thing for long enough that they've seen everything and that nothing like that should scare them. And that should have been something that wouldn't have scared them.
And furthermore, there's a whole race thing going on where you already think of him as the token black dude. And then over and over, they show you shots of the three white guys and no Winston doing things. And then they work him in sort of haphazardly. They finally get around to getting under the street, And when they all get attacked, who's the one who's not smart or cool or agile enough to get out of the way?
That's not it. See, but I like it. I like the way they treat his character because
he's the poster child for the token guy. Always.
Well, not only that, I mean, put that to the side. He is the only working guy here. Everybody else has degrees, you know, and is a con or some type of scientist. And he's just a working guy. He's just an ordinary Joe. And they only put him in there when they need that joke for the ordinary guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Well, I kind of like it.
But, you know, for everything we're saying, when Ernie Hudson is suddenly standing around in that red union suit, that's another one of those big sight gags. Really funny. Like that whole scene, I was giggling my ass off at him in that red union suit.
Really? Because I was more like,
why is his red?
Yeah, kind of that was it for me. Daryl wanted to remind us that the Chibi Daniela or whatever, it's the naked lady from They Live at the very end.
Yeah.
She's in this. Mm-hmm. She's Jason's mom in Ghostbusters 2.
What?
Jason's mom. Yeah. Birthday party at the beginning?
Yes. And also,
that's funny. So it's kind of like
she's also medical staff in Star Trek Next Generation episodes. We already have a Star Trek connection, but anyway, yeah. He wanted to make sure we knew that that lady showed up right away for us. Two films later, we've got her again. The kid who tells Ray that according to his dad, the Ghostbusters are full of crap is played by Jason Reitman, the son of director Ivan Reitman.
Yeah,
he's a very successful director now.
Yeah,
good for him. And what
was the name of the movie that was on the marquee?
Thank You for Smoking.
No.
Up in the Air.
Cannibal Girls.
Oh, okay.
Starring Eugene Levy and directed by Ivan Reitman.
His brother, Eugene Levy. Oh, nope. Ivan Reitman. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, really? Right.
I always like it to watch. I always like it to watch at the movies, and they have the the marquees with the names on it because always something up there.
No, Jason Reitman also did Juno. Almost forgot that one.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, 200 visual effects were shot during the entire film and used. The joystick the team uses is remember that part of the joystick?
Yeah.
It's an NES Advantage joystick with most of the body removed.
Which I still have.
Do you really?
Totally recognized it.
Wow.
Rad. Totally recognized
it. It had the turbo buttons.
So they coated the inside of her with slime, played the music so that she'd walk, but they still needed a joystick to control her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And they also shrunk her way down.
Right. Like you'll remember they learned this with the toaster. See, the toaster was moving, but they couldn't control it. See?
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah. Except I saw the legs on the toaster, but whatever.
And after they've used her for the one thing they needed to do, which is to bust through the skylight of the museum, in later shots where they have the panned back view of the museum, Statue of Liberty just laying face down on the ground.
I know. She just is. Leave it there, dude.
She is. Like, and then, but then at the very end of the movie, they show she's back in her spot.
Right.
That's
right.
Stupid. The courtroom scene, the prosecuting lawyer is carried out of the room upside down by her leg by one of the ghosts. Remember that part? In the trailer, you don't see – they didn't have all the special effects in yet. So you just see the lawyer floating out of the room upside down in the trailer.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is kind of cool. I went and checked it on YouTube, and sure enough, she's just hanging there with nothing holding her. Hmm. I thought the ghost – now, okay, this brings us to a point. One of the things I do like about Ghostbusters 2, the ghosty stuff, kind of creepy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like devilly creepy, gross. Like when what's his name? McNichol with the, you know, dude from Ally McBeal with a whistly nose is walking down the hall and his eyes are on and they all get all that gives me the freaking willies.
That was pretty dang cool. Yeah. You gotta admit.
Don't like that.
And I like, you know, I like how even though as people that the judge sentenced, you know, the judge in the courtroom scene sentenced, I'm sure they looked human, how the ghosts who came back, the brothers, whatever their name was, you know, had that whole haunted mansion from Disneyland kind of feel to them.
They did.
But still pretty creepy, like just still stretched out and weird. Mm-hmm. And the jogger ghost gave me the willies for some reason. I don't know why. That kind of stuff. So, yeah, I give them that. I thought that stuff was handled pretty well, more than the first film. First film was just...
You know, you got to say, no matter what do you say about this movie, it's got good production quality.
It's all right. It's okay. It's too much stop motion for 89. It had the feeling of, this stuff's about to go off.
Well, there was, I was wondering if that was the case. There was one ghost that you see in that montage scene with the jogger and all the other things that has a very Harryhausen feel to it. And I wondered if that was kind of a nod, you know, a tribute to him.
Oh, the French, yeah, the scene with the big, what's that big arch in France?
Yeah, the Trump.
Arch de Triomphe.
Yeah, that thing. It had a big
It's an arch and it has something to do with triumph, but I can't think of what the name of it is.
That sounds about right. Let's see what else.
In Vegas, they call that the place where you valet park.
Right?
That's pretty much it for trivia. I did like the 5 years later title card at the top of the movie.
Yeah.
Like they don't even bother. There's no story edit or anything. It's just black screen. Boom. Yeah. 5 years later. There's something about that I like.
They should have done more of that.
Yeah. And I forgot. And maybe 20
minutes later.
Maybe I was getting tired toward the end of the movie, but the kid is Venkman's, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yeah.
No.
Totally.
No.
Totally.
No.
No, I don't think it is. It's totally. it's the guy that ran away. Sigourney Weaver's character didn't get along with.
Okay.
The cello player from the first movie.
But they didn't really explain.
They're lying.
But then when they were done with Stay Puft Man, they were all lovey-dovey making out covered in goo.
Yep.
Which, you know, is every Saturday night for me. But then
it's hot and ready to pop.
But then at the end, I get that they had a falling apart or falling away or whatever. Right. During those 5 years, but something in my head kept telling me, no, that's Venkman's kid, and she's just saying it's this other guy's kid.
No, it's totally Venkman's kid. It seemed like
Venkman's kid.
It's not Venkman's kid.
It's not like you, then you're saying you don't trust her. Like
I don't trust her
or Ibbot.
Right, you don't trust me.
Don't trust Ibbot either. All right, well, I'll go. I can go either way on that. The do re Egon bit made me want to throw up in my hat and put it back on my head.
Horrible.
It was terrible. Mm-hmm. And I know they were trying to say, hey, look, it's these guys and they're back, everybody. And then it was dumb. Just like, don't make these hallowed actors do this thing you're making them do.
Right. But the great scene where they're talking about the slime, and see, I think Randy's right. There are a lot of little scenes that are just so funny and so well done. It's just strung together with all sorts of crap. But there's the scene where they're explaining the positive slime and the negative slime. It's about right before they do the toaster thing. They're talking about how they've infused positive vibes into the slime by talking to it and singing to it.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
It's insinuated that Harold Ramis has been sleeping with it. it's not overtly said, but the actors are so good that they can kind of pull off without hardly any effort, pull off, you know, the faces.
It's subtle is where they're strong, because these are all improv guys. They're Second City guys. They're, you know, SCTV guys. These guys all, they know how to act that way. And when they're asked to be so overt, it goes against what I think the first Ghostbusters did best. And other projects like, I don't know, Stripes or other things they did together that made them work so well. Groundhog Day or whatever. I feel like if they're going to, what we got here was like Back to the Future 2. And we got a pretty good movie in Back to the Future 3. I'm really hopeful that 3, which is slated for 2012, is a return to what made the first one great. Now, I realize it's a long time since then. And everyone's back, except I guess Rick Moranis is unknown for sure. But according to Reitman, he wants to do it.
Yeah.
That would be huge for having to come back for this. But if all these guys are there and they have this new crew, but it's still the old guys, I'm really hopeful that a third time could be the charm for this, and I'm really stoked for it. Like people I know are worried, but I'm stoked.
Yeah, I'm worried about the
humor.
I'm
one of the worried ones.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm worried about the humor aspect of it. Mm. Go ahead.
The sequels where they have to bring in a baby usually seem like they're grasping, and sequels where you have to train the new batch, you know, the new person or the new group to take over the franchise. Yeah. I'm looking at you, Shia LaBeouf.
Except when it was three men and a baby, you know, things go downhill when they bring in three men and a little lady. When they bring in a little lady, it's trouble too.
It's like, oh crap, we've already used the baby. What do we do for the sequel?
Spock.
How about we bring in a new batch?
Okay. That's great. Hey guys, taking a quick break to talk to you about Audible.com. Our friends at Audible sponsoring the show once again, and as usual, they're offering up a free book. It's real simple. But let me tell you about one I think you ought to check out. At Audible.com, they've got everything, unabridged everything, including periodicals as well as fiction, nonfiction, whatever you want. Heard about this new book, Area 51, An Uncensored History of America's Top Military Base. And people are raving about it. It's by Annie Jacobson, narrated by her as well. Normal price, $24.49. You can get it for $8 on Audible, or for free if you haven't signed up yet. Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack, and you can get this or any other book you want absolutely free. That's audiblepodcast.com/filmsack. Do it today, and we thank Audible for their support.
I mean, we're talking about something that we've talked about before, which is the fact that sequels, you know, part two to drama films are often really, really well received, and part two to comedies often take a nosedive into a mountain. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, there are a lot of obvious reasons for that. You know, it's comedy is all based on surprising the audience and showing them something unexpected. And once you already know what to expect, it's harder to, you know, to be original and make me laugh.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and dramas are kind of the opposite right. about that. The better I already know what to expect, the more you can do with my emotions. But I just think that a third could be awesome. Like it's like the potential for another Three Amigos movie. Mm. I can't wait.
Oh, is that happening? That's not happening, is it?
It's been teased.
Really? Another Three Amigos movie?
I would so watch that movie. I love those three guys.
Three Amigos?
Wait, one's Chevy Chase, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, I'm just making sure.
And another one of them is Steve Martin. And yet another one is Martin Short.
Okay.
Yeah.
And maybe they could even bring back, what's his name? I was only acting. I can't think of his name.
Oh, John Lovitz?
John Lovitz could come back and be the producer at the film studio again. That guy he was great as that.
It's a plethora of good actors in that film.
Bring back El Guapo.
El Guapo, yeah.
All right, I got a thing to say about the creepy painting. So here in a locally, the creepy painting, the Vigo painting, mm-hmm. was deemed as satanic locally. There was a big deal here locally about it. People were banning kids from seeing it, recommending people boycott the theaters because this painting represented a satanic possession storyline and that we should all avoid it. And of course, everyone like me said, no, that means we want to see it more.
Mm. Well, the whole movie really, really handles the occult and the supernatural and that type of thing really pretty well. Especially with Dan Aykroyd, he loves a lot of that stuff. He loves that. Yeah, he does.
He believes in UFOs. And have you seen that? There's a documentary on Netflix right now.
Yeah, I've seen that. Mm-hmm. I've seen that.
Yeah, I like him. Him and his vodka.
Yeah, him and his vodka drinking the whole time.
The skull
and
vodka,
his cigars.
Yeah. And he looks cooler the older he gets. I'm telling you, man, we have not seen the last of him in something great. Mm-hmm. Maybe it'll be Ghostbusters 3, but whatever it is,
Micro 4.
How about pull that TV off your head and be Grossman again in Gross Point Blank 2, the big sequel? Mm-hmm. I can't wait for it. He was so good in that, Randy. He was so freaking good.
Has he been good in any sequels, though? I'm just looking back here. Like the Blues Brothers 2000 or whatever it was called. I'm looking back through his archive here.
Burying Miss Daisy. That was pretty bad.
Dragnet 2.
Dragnet. No, there was no Dragnet 2, was there?
No, I'm kidding.
You know, I kind of like Dragnet.
I did like it.
Tom Hanks.
Yeah, totally.
It's all right. What was his name? I can't think of his name. He was in War Games.
Matthew Broderick?
No, he played the porno guy that was basically...
Dabney Coleman?
Yeah, Dabney Coleman played the penthouse guy or whatever.
Right, the Hugh Hefner type.
Totally enjoyed that
Bob Guccione.
It's probably not
I'm
that
just looking
good,
to see if... he just did Yogi Bear. I'm just looking to see if there's any sequels that...
Oh, he was just Yogi Bear? What is he doing?
He did a great Yogi Bear. No. I didn't see the movie, but the... His voice work in that.
Who played Boo Boo again?
Justin Timberlake.
I love that.
That's terrible.
Not terrible. Justin Timberlake is hilarious. Terrible.
All right, we've not gotten this much Sigourney Weaver in a bra since Alien. I wanted to mention that.
Yeah,
that's right.
She's still looking pretty good in 89. I like her. Whatever. The movie reminds me of how much I'm not making fun of the lady in this movie today.
There you go.
No. I've always been a fan of her.
Even though she's got a skull for her face, whatever.
She has a weird mouth. But.
All right. Forget her. Can we please talk about Annie Potts?
Annie Potts. Oh, cute.
Annie Potts is hot. Yeah.
She's hot, but not now.
Dude.
Now she's not. So
we were just watching Ghostbusters 2. Let's talk about Ghostbusters 2.
All right, fine. She was fine.
And Annie Hotz was Annie Hotz. Wow. Annie Potts. Never mind. I'll shut up.
Flip. Freudian match?
Annie Hotz. That's pretty good. All right. What else? I mentioned how I miss Rick Moranis. I think he was great. Peter McNichol is in the new Battleship movie. I just wanted people to be aware of that.
Great.
He is. That's coming out next year.
He was so good in this, in Ghostbusters 2, that when he appeared in...
You sank my movie.
When he appeared in Ally McBeal, I couldn't believe that
it was the same guy.
He didn't have an accent. Yeah. I was surprised.
It's really
weird. It was such a bad accent, though.
It really was. Oh, it totally was. But it pulled it off.
It was kind of
so
like
well.
The Balky guy in Beverly Hills Cop 1.
No.
Yeah, in Beverly Hills Cop. Remember Serge or whatever his name was? Like
I remember
that.
Him.
It's kind of like that.
This accent was horrible. But horrible in a funny way. Like, I'm saying it was, you know, it was like Robin Williams and Mrs. Doubtfire, you know? Funny but horrible.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Yeah, like when he put his boobs out with the lid tops. Was classic.
I don't know if I can ever watch that movie again.
Boy, Brian Dunaway's in a mood.
It kind of is. I like it. We're probably going to get an F-bomb out of him before too long here. Peter McNichol, though, really, really great in it. And by the way, just to keep count, second Peter McNichol movie we've seen on FilmSack. First one was Excalibur.
Oh gosh!
Or wait, I'm sorry. Was it Excalibur? No, yeah, with
Curly. No, Dragon Slayer.
Dragon Slayer. That's it.
Dragon Slayer.
You're right. Yeah,
he was curly headed.
Really bad in that.
Galen.
Let's see. Here. Oh, my favorite point in the film was the mink coat coming alive. That was great.
Yeah. You like that?
Yeah, because it was so stupid.
They'll start screaming at
her. Yeah, you can see the little wires holding up the heads. It was stupid.
Yeah, and those people on the sidewalk are jumping to the correct side of the wire.
Yeah. The thing I hated most in the movie, there's a few things I didn't like, but the thing I hated the most was the closing rap song. Where
they called the Ghostbusters and the In Control.
Yes, where he sings the plot of the film.
Yes,
or raps it. I'm sorry, raps the it's entire not his plot fault. Of the film. Nice. Sorry, my son just handed me something. Looks good, bud.
This just handed to me.
It's a drawing of me, and I look like. Well, I look like Randy. Actually, that's a lot of beard, bud. You sure I have that kind of beard? All right.
I didn't mean to.
There's no halfway on a Sharpie.
That's awesome. Anyway, so yeah, the mink thing I thought was funny. I hate Bobby Brown, and it's still hard for me in films to see the Twin Towers. It's hard for me.
Yeah,
I actually said that while in that last scene, that last shot. I said, man, that puts your heart in your throat.
It
right
really
there.
Does, and it's not because, you know, obviously these films were made well before that time, but actually in that case, not like 11 years later, it'd be gone, but... But it's weird just to see it, and especially ones that are more recent. It's even harder for me. But I see it, and I just kind of go, ugh, those should be there still. That should be – those iconic things should not be gone. That sucks. Down with terrorism. I think that every time.
Yeah.
On that somber note.
Hey, you want to know what I hated?
What'd you hate? I'll just go around and talk.
You hate this stuff?
Brian, what'd you hate?
Hated the forced and painful – rhymes that they did, you know, like one in the ground and now it's out of town or something like that. Cause it felt like, hey, remember when we did a couple things like this in the first movie? Let's make some of those.
Let's do it again.
Yeah.
It's like a list of 10 things we had to have in this movie, like we did in the first one. Got to find points of similar interest. Yeah.
Also, should the actors know the lyrics to the theme song of the movie? Should they know that? Cause I don't think that's cool to do that.
Ghostbusters.
And we're in control. No, they were singing. They were doing the whole, like, who are you going to call thing.
Right. Yeah. When they had to go do that children's party.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't like that.
But that's from their commercial.
Yeah, that was from the commercial from the first. Well, I guess it wasn't used in the first movie, but it was implied that.
But did they have the whole song? I don't remember that. Like the whole
We Believe You commercial. They didn't have the.
Something strange. They didn't do all that. Did they? Maybe they got up and went, if there's something strange in your neighborhood, who are you going to call? I don't know.
I got triple art.
It'd be like, you know what it'd be like? It'd be like Indiana Jones popping out of a tent while Solek's there going, Indy, bad day, and have him go,
I would love that. If he was like whistling that or something.
That would be terrible. All right. Sorry. I interrupted somebody. Somebody was saying something.
Oh, I have a
Brian
a
had a trope.
Oh, trope. Hold on. I got to pull up the troper thing. Hold on. Wait. Oh. Go.
It's not a very strong trope, but it's true. Anytime anytime there's anything supernatural happening in a movie, the police, they can't handle it.
Nope.
They always seemed dumbfounded and dumbstruck. It's like, chief, there's a guy on the phone.
Yeah, but another busy police precinct, you notice that?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yes.
People running around. We got an email about that today, finally, from a cop.
Really?
Oh, really?
Yeah, we got some actual dirt on what that's about.
Oh, good.
Really?
Thank goodness. Randy, you got anything else? Like any something you hated, loved?
Oh, my gosh. Despised? There were so many things in this film to hate. The thing that sorry, I've got a thing in my throat right now. I hate that.
Is that slime?
It could be slime.
Yeah, is it happy slime?
Don't yell at it. Don't yell at it.
Oh, that's gross. Okay, yes.
Yeah, I hate the whole story arc, actually.
Mm.
Like, as much as I love it being a setup for some really funny gags, the story arc itself just makes me sad. You know, like where a movie like Stripes has a funny, you know, like maybe not even a funny story, but just a story that works for the gags. Yeah. This one is like the gags and the story are fighting against one another.
Yeah.
And that just, in the end, I was like, oh, this could have been such a better movie. And it wouldn't have cost more money. You know, they just needed it written better.
Where do you stand on the whole Sergeant Bilko was a spiritual successor to Stripes argument?
I've never heard this argument, but it makes sense.
Maybe that's only in my own head.
Dude, was that in The Onion? It's not real.
Come on up. About that one.
No, I've seen, look, I'm a fan of Sergeant Bilko as a film. I like it. And it reminds me, there are a bunch of things in it that are very Stripes-ish. Uh-oh. Microphone wrestling.
Somebody's falling.
Dang it.
That must be Randy. Wait.
I'd say Private Benjamin is more likely the spiritual
successor. I just leaned back in my chair and fell.
Oh,
I've never done that before.
We heard you falling like it was something like that.
Fortunately, I didn't fall all the way to the floor. Oh, my God.
You know what? It sounded like someone had intruded and was like trying to rob you.
I'm going to take this TV and this microphone.
Wrestling it out of your hands.
You're not.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe what just happened to me.
All right. You're okay, though, right?
Yeah, I'm fine. Right, good. I think.
Stripes versus Bilko. Your thoughts, Mr. Jordan?
Yeah, it must have blown you away with that. You've all seen that, though, right? The Sergeant Bilko?
I have seen Sergeant Bilko.
Oh, you love it. One, right? Yeah, it's Steve Martin, and it's what's his name right before he died? Phil Hartman. He played the general guy.
The film that I'm so glad spawned from all of those was The Pentagon Wars. Do you remember this?
No.
Mm-mm. No.
Cary Elwes is a lieutenant colonel in the army tasked with building a single piece of machinery for the Pentagon, and it spends 30 years trying to get it done.
No.
No, you
is it good?
Pentagon Wars?
I'm looking at the cover of the DVD box right now, and I have never seen
it. I don't even have to watch it. Keep going.
It is hysterical. I love that movie.
Cary Elwes, the dude from Princess Bride and the first cut 'em up movie. What was that called? Saw?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Kelsey Grammer?
If you can find a way to watch The Pentagon Wars, I highly recommend it. I don't highly recommend it. I think you should watch it. In the same vein, I think you should watch Let's Go to Prison. It's not a good movie. It's really funny.
Don't you guys feel like the first Saw movie should be older than 2004?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not.
That feels like a fairly new franchise.
Well, there's so many of them. There's like seven of them now, so it seems like that should be older. I guess.
Yeah, they just poop them out.
They just shite. Okay. Well, there's
the guy on the floor is the guy who's doing it.
The who? The what?
The guy on the floor is the guy who's doing it.
Oh,
Saw one
the whole time, every time. That's all those movies always boil down, don't they?
Yep.
It's the guy who's with you the whole time that seemed real scared. Yeah. Saw. You know, this is a sign that we didn't like Ghostbusters 2 very much because we're talking about Saw.
Hey, you know what I did? You know what I loved about this film?
What?
It was the first film that Tina and I ever saw together.
Oh, really?
Wow.
That's
and y'all managed to hang together?
I was dating her friend Shannon at the time. And Shannon said, hey, you mind if we pick up a friend of mine and have her join us for the movie? I'm like, yeah, sure. And so we brought Tina. And I continued to go out with Shannon for quite a while afterwards. And Tina and I just became friends. And even after Shannon and I broke up, Tina and I continued talking to each other. And then maybe a year later,
Remember that time we saw Ghostbusters 2?
Remember that movie we hated?
You guys were bad sequel buddies. Is that what it was?
Yes, exactly. Mm. Exactly.
That's kind of nice.
Saw Back to the Future 2 together. We went and saw it. No.
Oh my gosh, I can't. You know what? I can't think of what first movie I saw with my wife. Oh, that's terrible.
Oh, I know exactly which first movie I saw with mine.
I can't. Well, it was more recent for you. I got to think of a. I got to think of a like that far back. It's like 17 years ago.
I couldn't tell you the first movie Tina and I saw when we were dating. Mm-hmm. But this was the day I met Tina.
Okay. So mine would have been, oh my gosh, I don't know. I'm embarrassed. I don't know. I'm going to have to figure that out. That's going to piss her off if she ever hears that. She probably has some special movie moment that I don't know
about. I'm texting her right now.
Let her know, will you?
Could you do me a favor and ask Scott what the movie was y'all saw first together?
Hey, we're playing Newlywed Game on FilmSack. What was the first movie?
Oh, my gosh. If I could play the Tijuana Brass that quickly, I would. let's play some clips. Got a few of these here. You Guys Are Full of Crap is the first one. This is actual Jason Reitman, future director extraordinaire, being hired by his dad to say a line. Here it is.
You know, my dad says you guys are full of crap.
Jason. Well, some people have trouble believing in the paranormal.
No, he just says you guys are full of crap, and that's why you went out of business.
Ooh, some fighting words from him. That was Naked Mom saying Jason using his real name. That was kind of cool.
Right. Yeah.
It makes me sad how much younger Jason Reitman is than us.
Mm.
Like, I guess it's just all about who you're born to.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, 89, he would have been like, I was looking him up, he would have been like 12 or 11, 12, something like that. So, because he's now 30 something.
13
or 14. Yeah. Here's one. This is Peter McNichol. No, I'm sorry. This is meeting Peter Venkman on his psychic show, which again. Whatever. That stuff was all right, but here he is talking.
Your new book is called The End of the World. Now, can you tell us when it's going to be, or do we have to buy the book?
Well, I predict that the world will end at the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve.
This year?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cutting it a little bit close, isn't it? I mean, just from a sales point of view, I mean, your book is just coming out. You're not going to see any paperback sales for at least a year. It'll be at least another year before you know whether you've got the miniseries or movie of the week kind of possibilities. I mean, just devil's advocate, Milty. I mean, shouldn't you have said, hey, the world's going to end in 1992
or
better yet, 1994?
This is not just some money-making scheme.
Okay, recognize the voice?
Yeah, yes. Bill Murray.
No, the other guy. The other guy is the dad on Transformers.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah,
he's a total character actor too, and we've seen him in so many things.
Oh yeah, there's lots of stuff, but most recently that is what his forte has been, is to be in the worst Michael Bay films.
Usually plays sweaty bald dude.
Ooh, I hear there's a new role coming up in Hollywood for sweaty bald dude. You should apply.
I'm all on it.
Oh, that's Kevin Dunn.
Yeah, Kevin Dunn. Over Unger. I was over under. You were under.
No, we were saying earlier that the other guy was Kevin Dunn, the new Dickless.
Oh yeah, yeah. Right. Oh, it's not. Yeah,
yeah. No, wait. Who? No. I'm thinking of the new Dickless. Is it's a great way to think of that guy. I'm thinking of Kurt Fuller.
Kurt Fuller. I'm sorry, I did have it wrong.
The assistant to the mayor.
Fuller and Dunn.
Yeah. Fuller and Dunn. Nice. And Brian Dunaway. I think you got my airplane reference. Nice job. I heard you laugh over there. Okay, so then there was this clip here, which is Meet the Weasel Dude from Ally McBeal, which is Peter McNichol doing his thing. Check it out.
Well, I can't today. I have an appointment. In fact, I better go.
I don't understand this. You know, every day I say, well, do you can you do something? You say, no, I can't do something. You know, what? Do I have a bad breath or something?
Of course not.
Well, I give you a rain check.
Yeah, you're right. It's a bad accent.
It's a horrible accent, but for whatever reason, I was surprised when I first heard his real voice on Alan McBeal.
Well, it's because we were young and we didn't know.
I didn't remember him from Dragon Slayer.
We were 19.
They should have given all of his screen time to like Bill Murray or somebody. I mean, I liked his character, but they should have given that time to somebody else.
I don't know. He was, again, by the blueprint, he was Rick Moranis' character from the first movie.
But we already had Rick Moranis. That's what I'm saying. You're talking up the time.
Yeah, but you got to keep Rick around.
Yeah, Rick Moranis had a whole different point.
And his lawyer bit was so good. And he didn't show up till late in the film.
Mm-hmm.
The lawyer stuff was after they tried to break into the sewer system or whatever, or actually, I guess they did. Boy, that sentient slime. I don't know. I have problems with that generally. But let's move on to A Man Has Needs. This is Venkman making a case.
You never got it, Dana. I'm a man. I'm sensitive. I need to feel loved. I need to be desired.
It was when you started introducing me as the old ball and chain. That's when I left.
Oh, Newt. We have to go back for Newt. She can't talk. She can't talk without me thinking of aliens.
That was the worst scene in the movie to me.
I felt like there's no chemistry there. I really have never. The whole movie, I don't feel any chemistry between Peter and what's her name.
Well, that's one of the problems, and you feel a lot of that in the first one.
I know.
And this one, but they're supposed to be mad at each other, so I'm kind of like, I'm going, are the actors acting the way they're supposed to? Because they're supposed to be kind of estranged.
But even when they were friendly again, they weren't that way, though.
You're probably right. I think his relationship with the baby and him talking to the baby was probably the best acting he did in the movie.
It's because it wasn't acting. I mean, with Bill Murray, it seems like you just say, here's where you need to get by the end of the scene. Here's the things that need to happen. Here's the plot points you need to bring up. And then here's where you need to be for the for the block.
And here's the baby.
And here's the baby. Go.
And you know you want to see old man-faced, wrinkled-up Bill Murray that we have now. You know you want to see that Peter Venkman in the next movie. I really do.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to see him training the new crew, though.
Well, how do you think they'll do that? Because
I totally want him to do that, because I want to be the guy who's still trying to make a dollar. You know what he's doing? He's always trying to con.
I thought you were going to say you wanted to be the guy who's still trying to get laid, which would be better.
Yeah, that too. The con and the lay. That's pretty much his whole MO.
Oh, that's weird. Like Ghostbusters 3. Check this out. Elijah Dushku is rumored to be cast. Anna Faris, who I think is both hot and funny, is rumored to be cast. Bill Murray, Sigourney Weaver, Bill Hader. Oh, Bill Hader. Sweet.
Bill Hader would be great.
Oh, he'd be a great new Ghostbuster. Let's bring him in. Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Annie Potts, and Ernie Hudson are all either rumored or confirmed. And then the Moranis stuff is still on the edge. But these are all people that have been talking.
Ernie Hudson's like, sure, I can do 5 minutes.
I got 10 minutes. I can do this.
Sure.
Yeah.
Dude, you could put Bill Hader in anything for me right now. His character of Stefan on Saturday Night Live is the funniest thing on TV.
No, he's one of the funniest things on TV. I absolutely love Bill Hader.
I like the news reporter guy that he plays. The old guy, news reporter guy.
Yeah.
Kills me.
Not the alien sports reporter.
No.
The one that they try and convince people is not an alien.
He should just be in more stuff. That's all I'm saying. More movies, more whatever. Needs to have a big, long, storied career. Here's one. The evil painting guy talks. So here's our chance to hear film sacked regular Van Sydow, also known as Ming the Merciless. Check him out.
This is to me.
What?
I, Vigo, the scourge of Carpathia, the sorrow of Moldavia, command you.
Oh, command me, Lord.
On a mountain of skulls in the castle of pain, I sat on a throne of blood. What was will be, what is will be no more. Now is the season of evil.
Dude,
hey, whoa. That's what I did at the top of the show.
You did. You're right. You did. Still a repeat for you, but not him, the actor though. That was another actor there.
Really?
Yeah, he didn't do the voice. That was a total dub job. I don't know who that guy was. We could find it.
I'm sure we could. But, ungrateful yuppie larva.
He had a cool look though. Given that
he did
look better on the painting though than he did when he was out of the painting.
He has a great scowl,
because out of the painting he looked like a washed up like hair metal band guy.
that painting was my iPad login screen or lock screen for the longest time.
Really? Nice. That's great. Until you realize that it's not a very good sequel, and now you'll take it off.
No, it's, you know, as on its own, it's a great picture.
All right,
it is.
Well, awesome. Let's see what else. We got more here. Let's do some. Okay, someone needs to make a song out of this, and when you hear it, you'll agree. It's kind of has a song to
sing
it.
Song.
Yeah. Listen to this.
Slime. What? It's a river of slime.
Slime. It's a river of slime.
It does sound like it needs to be auto-tuned,
right, doesn't it?
Fat Boy Slim, get on that right now.
Slime. It's a river of slime. All right. Lewis is is the lawyer part. This is great. Well, actually, this is the first part of it, and then I'll play the other part. Here's this part.
What can we do? It's all in the hands of our lawyer now.
I think you guys are making a big mistake. I do mostly tax law and some probate stuff occasionally. I got my law degree in night school.
Well, that's fine, Lewis. We got arrested at night.
But I thought he was an accountant.
Wasn't he
in the first movie, he was.
He is, but... He does this also.
Hey, Dana, I was just wondering if you want to come over to the house. We're having that whole thing.
Yeah.
He was an accountant. Some of my clients are here.
Party.
Yeah. Oh, I like Lewis.
Yep.
Here he is. The best scene in the movie, in my opinion. This part made me laugh. It's 30 seconds long, and it's him trying to represent Venkman on the stand, and it's great. Check it out.
So you were just trying to help out a friend.
Who was frightened.
Who was scared of what was happening to her. No, when you're scared, what? There was no evil intended, no malice. Because you live here. When you live in a place and you love it like you do, you don't want nothing bad to happen. What? Because it'll never happen again. It's an isolated incident. It's a one-shot deal.
Objection, Your Honor.
What?
He's leading the witness.
Sustained.
Give me a break. We're both lawyers.
I actually like that.
Wasn't that great?
That was really good.
That's where those guys got to show off the Second City kind of jive, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just love that. Felt very improv, and I don't know. I miss Rick Moranis. I'm going to go listen to the Great White North album just to feel better. Mm-hmm.
Did he and Dave Thomas do that thing for the, what was it? Was it a Disney film?
Yeah, Brother Bear, yep.
Okay.
So one of the few things he's done since retiring. That was in 2003, I think, if I'm not incorrect. Maybe 2002. But yeah, that was him. Him and Dave Thomas. They should come back and do that all the time.
Yeah, they should.
Yeah.
I have no problem with that. Bob and Doug McKenzie are two of my favorite people on earth. I love those characters. They're great.
Love the movie.
Yep. We should watch that for the show.
It was on Netflix not too long ago. If it still is.
Is it off now?
I don't know.
Did they yank it like Tango and Cash without warning anybody?
It should totally be on forever.
More like Yanko and Cash.
Meh.
All right. That's almost it. We got one last one here. It's called Party Time. Oh, this is McNichol being weird. Check it out.
4 minutes to go, and then party times.
Party times. 4 minutes to go.
Party
times. All right, that's it for clips. Let's move on to our awards for the day.
And yeah.
Let's do this first, because I got to have this. Oh, yeah. It's time for Film Tag Awards. And this episode is no different. Let's see what we got here. The Star Trek Award goes to the judge. There's a few of them, but we'll give it to the judge, who was a dude on Deep Space Nine, played a character called Aaron Lustig. So we'll give him the award. There are a few others. I like that guy. He's a great character actor.
Mm-hmm.
Weird Casting Award. Bobby Brown as Mayor's Dorman. Also Cheech Marin as Dock Worker as a runner-up.
I still love that face.
Best Stunt Voice Casting, Max von Sydow is the Ivan Painting Man, and Dude in Every Movie Ever Award, Kurt Fuller. He's in everything.
True.
Best Reminder That We Need Rick Moranis to Come Back into the Acting Award was him in his own movie.
Yes.
And I would give the soundtrack grade a C because Bobby Brown had a part in it, and it sucked.
I'm gonna give it a B.
Well, no, hold on a minute. B's fine, but don't you think like the stuff every time Venkman came in to talk to Dana, it had that stupid rom-com,
pling pling pling,
yeah, that sucked. That was terrible.
I liked it.
All right, C then. Let's give it a C.
I enjoyed it.
You did not. Tell me why you enjoyed it. What'd you like?
It lets me know when to laugh.
Yeah, but what about why'd you like it?
I like the scoring. I thought it was a very well scored film.
All right. I don't think so.
Can't you stop your lips from flapping for just a minute?
What's the difference again between the soundtrack and the score? You know, the soundtrack is well, it has
what
Bobby Brown and the
it's
score doesn't. So
what you'd buy at the stove.
Okay, fine. Score was all right. Soundtrack not as good.
There you go.
I said soundtrack, really? But I didn't mean to.
Soundtrack connection.
Soundtrack connection. All right, let's get to the Twitter post, 140 characters or less. This is where you guys sum it up, what you thought of this film. Let's start this week with Randy Jordan. What do you got?
Ghostbusters 2, just like the first Ghostbusters, only without Ernie Hudson, who wasn't in the first one either. That makes no sense.
He was more in the first one than this one. At least he had a little story to do, not just stand in front of a fake train going. Brian Dunaway, how would you sum it up?
Ghostbusters 2, the best part was when Randy fell out of his chair. No, wait, that was this show. everything you're doing is bad.
Wow. Everything. You made that one up on the fly. Then
you gotta do what you gotta do.
Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Ghostbusters 2, a string of funny moments strung together with a plot made of scotch tape, baling wire, and a crap ton of slime.
I swear, that was the most slime ever. Well, here's what I learned while you robbed a Nickelodeon of all their slime for this movie.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Sigourney still got it. Haunted toasters. Beware of giant tub penis. What? Remember the big pink tub penis?
Yeah.
Right after the bra part. You were
Shouldn't
so...
that have been positive slime? Because she was singing to the baby and talking all nice to the baby. So you think the slime penis would have been happy slime penis.
You'd think.
Happy bathtub slime penis.
Yeah, but instead it was mad slime penis. Tub slime penis.
Happy tub slime.
And then finally, let's start worrying about part three. And I hope I'm wrong about that. We got emails from listeners. I got a couple of them this week. First one comes to us from Chris. Says, hey, guys. Let me blow this up because it's text is really small for some reason. Oh, there we go. Hey, guys. Just wanted to comment quickly on the topic of crowded, chaotic police stations that have been appearing in the sacked films lately. I work as a police officer in Florida, and I can say that in reality, departments and stations are run much different than the way they are portrayed in films. When suspects are arrested and brought back to be booked at a local department before being transported to a county or federal lockup, they are separated by gender and age, number one, so that's a big deal.
A big sorting machine.
Exactly, like a big mail thing, just jamming them through there. Keeping arrestees in a large area together is a violation of several ordinances and statutes. Another misconception about the amount of hookers that are arrested. Prostitution is one of the most difficult crimes to develop possible cases of arrest for unless you have set up an actual prostitution sting. Arrests for this type of crime are few and far between, even in major cities. The bottom line is that chaos shown in most films is the exact environment we try to avoid in an actual department, as it would be extremely counterproductive, Officer Chris.
And scary.
Thanks for the, you know, it's nice to get a final word on what we see in every damn movie, including this one.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Chaos police town. John Wilson also wrote us and said, listening to the Demolition Man sack. Wait, neither way is good.
Man sack. I knew that would eventually happen.
Yeah. Kind of like that Andy Dick story this morning on TMS. And have something to add on one of the tropes. Firing a gun from inside a car at someone on the roof. I have personally fired a weapon in an enclosed area, and you will never do it again if you do this.
Yeah.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. He says, after the first round, the person in the car would be deaf and stunned. It's like getting punched in the head. You wouldn't be able to operate the car afterwards. Love the show. Thanks, John. Isn't that great?
I want to hear why he fired a gun.
Me too. Because Schwarzenegger was on the roof trying to get in.
Why not? No, he said in an enclosed space. He didn't say in a car necessarily.
That's true. It could have been in a gun range or something like that.
Oh, right.
Well, I did think it was the car.
One of those tiny enclosed gun ranges.
Yeah. I like to think it's a car as well. So let us know, John. Follow it up and let us know what you think. Before I play Scott Fletcher quotes, I'm going to tell you who won and for what film they won. For the Film Sack Live contest thing that we're going to do on June 17th. The contest ended today. It's over with. It's done. Lots of submissions. We appreciate everyone who did that. You're all getting swag packs, so look forward to those coming in the mail. They'll be there shortly after the event happens. And also a reminder that the entire event, including the Film Sack Live coverage, will be streamed live to the internet so people can hear it wherever they are, regardless of device or platform. You'll be able to get the whole thing. Drew Witta is our winner.
All right.
He's from Ohio.
Way to go, Drew.
Ohio. And the movie that he voted for and most people voted for, or a good proportion of them did, which is why it got picked, and then he got picked at random from that group, is Tremors, ladies and gentlemen. We will be watching Tremors.
Yay.
and then doing a regular.
I found the ass end.
I could have told you, Randy, that it was Tremors 4, and it could be worse.
I know. Joke's on you. We were going to watch Tremors anyway.
That's true. Tremors was on our list. But yes, Tremors, we have bumped that now to be the live Film Sack episode, and there is a few surprises attached to that that I cannot reveal yet because you need to be at the event to truly appreciate it.
Is it bacon and eggs?
No, it's even better than that.
Everyone gets a sandworm. You get a sandworm.
You get a sandworm, right. Everyone gets a...
I got sandworm.
Did you win?
I
just got the bacon reference. That was pretty good because the Kevin Bacon part. I totally missed that.
I didn't get nicely done.
Nicely done, Brian.
Your jokes, your humor is way too highbrow for me.
I know. You're way advanced. You're ahead of us. You're going to be like, you're the, what's his name that was kind of a wrestler and then disappeared? What was his name?
Lou Albino?
Andy... Kaufman. You're the Andy Kaufman of Film Sack.
Yeah.
I can't believe of all the things you could say about Andy Kaufman on the fly, he was kind of a wrestler. Of all the myriad things you could say about this performance artist.
I know, but I couldn't think of any
kind of a wrestler.
Anything that was like more notable. I don't know why.
Taxi,
Taxi, right, Latka. See? I just need you to do it for me. So anyway, congratulations to Drew Witta. I'll be in contact with you, and thank you everybody for participating. You've not only helped support the event in a major way, but you have also helped us choose a film, and we cannot wait to do Tremors, except apparently Randy, but that's okay because that's what we want. We like a little dissent.
Can I bring my own copy?
Yes, if you want. Gosh. Well, we're not watching it live. We're just doing a show live about the thing, so you got to watch it before you go.
Oh, don't worry.
Yeah, it'll be
like we do every week. I'll watch it like in the hotel room the morning of.
On your iPad.
Oh, crap.
Oh, shoot. We're supposed to do a show today.
Fast forward. Okay, let's get to the end. All right, fast forward.
By the way, I just want to mention how much I love it when people hear us make some random recommendation and then write us later and say, hey, thanks to you, I finally got around to watching Firefly and loved it or whatever. Mm. While we were recording, I got a direct message on Twitter from G. Cooley, who said that he, because of my recommendation, he watched Superbad with the super meter turned on.
I just love
that.
Nice.
It's just so much fun, and I'm glad that people actually occasionally go follow our recommendations.
Well, it's an interactive medium, and we're glad to hear when people do that.
We like it when they follow our recommendation, unless it's for MacGruber.
That's true. That's a good point. Hey, let's play Scott Fletcher quotes. These are from this film, from Ghostbusters 2. And we'll start with this one. Something about cats.
Next week on World of the Psychic, Hairless Cats. Weird.
Nice. Actually, I thought that was pretty good in the movie. Viggo quote.
I, Viggo, the scourge of Carpathia, the sorrow of Moldavia, command you.
Yeah, so everyone's ripping Dunaway off today with your intro thing.
Sorry.
Yeah. And then finally.
Maybe I'm ripping off.
Finally, I'll be back.
Death is but a doorway. Time is but a window. I'll be back.
I don't remember Schwarzenegger being in this film. When did that happen? Was that Viggo at the end?
Yeah.
Oh, by then I was
yeah.
like.
So yeah, he was up talking, walking around. No.
This was when he was inside Dan Aykroyd, right?
Oh, right. Mm. Yeah, when Aykroyd was all fat faced and testing out his technology for that new movie he was working on with everybody, where his penis looked like a nose, or his nose looked like a penis, rather. that movie that sucks difference? So bad. What's it called again?
Are you Nothing thinking about Roxanne?
No. Big No, I love Roxanne. And his nose was not like a penis in Roxanne.
And he wasn't in Roxanne.
You're talking about Nothing But Trouble, aren't you?
I'm talking about Nothing But Trouble. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just couldn't say it.
But that would be
too
easy.
At some point, we are going to have to do that one for Film Sack. It does fit. It fits the criteria.
Really? Do we really?
The criteria?
Do we really have to? Are you guys going
to? We have to.
Here's the question. Is it streaming on Netflix?
If it is.
I think we just buy our own copy and we'll just watch it.
No, I'm not buying anything.
What's like $1.50? I mean, come on.
It is streaming on Netflix. Okay. Nothing but
all right. We're not buying it though.
Are you sure?
No one will spend any additional money for this film.
Okay, Scott Johnson.
What?
How can you go wrong with Chevy Chase, John Candy, and Dan Aykroyd?
That's what I said when I went to see it. But you know what? There are so many answers to that question. It hurts.
They got it on VHS.
Yeah.
There are 5-star reviews. 5 out of 5-star reviews.
There's 5-star reviews for Ghostbusters 2. You can't use that.
You can't say that.
There are 5-star reviews for every bad movie.
On the other hand, on the critic reviews, Entertainment Weekly gave it 1.5 star out of 5.
That's about right.
Look, Nothing But Trouble is like less than a dollar on Amazon.
It's
garbage.
That's
less than a dollar too much.
And I hate to admit it, it may be garbage perfect for this show. I love all those actors.
Tomatoes got a single star. Wow.
It's bad, dude. It's a bad film. It's the worst movie ever made, but maybe we'll put it on the list.
It can't be.
All right. I think you've forgotten. You're going to hate it.
It has a soundtrack?
Yeah, of course. It's called Dan Aykroyd's Face Has a Penis on It. all right. That's it for that. Next week, we are doing The Golden Child. No longer doing Tremors next week. We're doing Golden Child next week. So stay tuned for that. I think that will that be our penultimate?
Might I please speak to the
Yes.
Oh my gosh, it is weird.
Yes, there is one film sack between now and the
live deal.
Yep.
Wow.
Okay. And then we'll publish that one shortly after the event, after I've had a chance to get the audio out. They're recording that entire day to some big solid state drives, and so I have to, there's some work there, but I'll take care of that probably a few days after.
Yeah. They've got Nothing But Trouble and Mars Attacks 2-pack DVD. Come on.
Oh my gosh. For what?
Why would you pair those two movies?
Because you can.
Because you can't sell them individually. Somehow it adds value to put two pieces of poo into one giant turd.
Wow. It's $21.90 if you buy them together, or $1 if you buy them separate.
What? Maybe combined they do something special.
I don't know.
Maybe they somehow two horrible movies makes one good one. I don't know.
Shitty two movies activate. Shape of. Right.
Shape of one decent film.
Yeah.
I love that idea. All right, so watch for that. Golden Child next week. We've been talking about that one forever. It is streaming, so finally we're going to watch it. And don't forget the website, filmsack.com. All the notes and stuff are there. Email us at filmsack@gmail.com. Happy to read your emails. And follow us on the Twitter at twitter.com/filmsack. And if you have the heart to do it, leave us a review on iTunes. We love your feedback there as well. We'll see you for our penultimate to our live episode next week. Between now and then, everyone within the sound of my vocal cords, take care. No, nothing?
Got nothing.
That's a lot of paper in front of the museum blowing around. What's up?
Trope. I hope so. Okay, here we go.
Wait, is Brian Dunaway back from taking a crap?
Oh, did he really go poo?
No, I never left.
Oh. I thought I was going to say, you have a colostomy bag now, right?
I have wireless, so I'm just sitting on the pooper.
Wireless.
It would be awesome, though, if you had Wi-Fi pooping.
Oh,
always whistle when I poop.